I'm expecting.
Welcome to the Reinvent Health Podcast. I'm Nikki Robertson, and my guest today is Dr. Kirsten Lauritsen. Dr. Kirsten is a functional medicine doctor, chiropractor, mom, and athlete. She specializes in helping her patients get to the root of burnout and overwhelm and enables them to transform both their physical and mental health. I don't know anyone who isn't having to deal with life's challenges. Work life, family life, and finding time to fit everything in is a constant balancing act, which is why today's episode is brought to us by Salal's All You Need for Women. Established in 2011, Salal is a renowned healthcare and skincare brand committed to improving the health and well-being of individuals through high-quality, effective products. Salal's product range includes unique formulations that combine pharmaceutical-grade ingredients and plant extracts. EYN, or All You Need, contains optimal doses of nutrients created especially for women from the ages of 20 to 50. Salal's All You Need is available everywhere you can purchase quality nutritional supplements. Thank you so much for joining me again on the podcast. I love our discussions and I can't wait to dive in today.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I'm excited to be back again. I'm thrilled and honored. It's always a pleasure to be here.
Thank you. So what I'd like to do is just let's go back 5 years and reiterate your original journey for those who haven't heard our earlier podcast, just to set the tone and what drove you to become the functional medicine practitioner that you are today.
Yeah. So started out, like I'll kind of breeze through it a little bit, but started out when I was about, I was trying to think about this the other day, but like 13, 14, I started getting symptoms of what I later learned was endometriosis. So really painful periods. And it was different. Like both my mom and my sister didn't have those things. And so we weren't really sure what it was. And they didn't really understand it either because they didn't experience, like, they kind of just thought, like, you know, it was what it was. And we didn't know that much about it back then anyway. So then I also got diagnosed with migraines after that. And then I also started having a lot of GI, like gut related problems. And even to the point where I especially in college with stress, I kind of stopped eating at a certain point just because it was so painful to eat. Like my stomach literally hurt when I was eating food. And so that's what started. I went through the whole thing of going through the conventional way of looking at things, which I'm very much so a like both and person, because there are times where, you know, the conventional way of doing things has saved my life. But also it's not as great when a lot of the chronic conditions that we have, which we'll talk about probably a bit today, have a lot to do with our lifestyle and with like the food and exercise and all of those things that are really, really important for our day-to-day health. But there's also, and this is what I have just dove into over the last several years, is there's so much more when it comes to like our emotions and our thoughts and our beliefs and how so much of those patterns influence our they influence disease, they influence health, they influence our risk, they increase our risks oftentimes of getting disease. So, you know, I started a journey of trying to heal myself. And so through that journey, I went into psychology and then I went into becoming a chiropractor, which I think framed so much of how I look at the body now from a biology standpoint and how we look at the whole system and how it functions. And really that I do believe that the body wants to heal. I think that it is always trying to reach that level of like homeostasis and health, but it's also there to stay alive and stay safe and protect itself. And so it does a lot of things. The body does a lot of things to try and keep us moving and to keep us going. But sometimes that ends up leading to things that do not feel very good. So then I went on and I knew how important nutrition was. And I started learning what functional medicine was. And so at the same time, I went to my chiropractic to get my chiropractic degree, doctorate. I also got my master's in human nutrition and functional medicine. And then from there, I took it and I worked a lot with athletes, but at the same time, athletes many times are also moms. And in my practice, I was starting to see so many patterns and so many patterns that were starting to happen across the board of working with people who typically are active and also just are people and humans and have chronic type conditions. And then I was like, okay, meanwhile, I'm also trying to work on my stuff, and still trying to heal and learn how to heal my painful periods, endometriosis, migraines, things like that. And then I started looking at there's got to be more here. And that's when I started getting into neuro-linguistic programming, which started to really frame, and that's just a base foundation of really a lot of more learning into how our mind, our thoughts, our words, the way we think, the patterns, the emotions, a lot of that inner depth work that just goes so much deeper into really where all of this started, the origins of where disease essentially starts, which can be very far back in our time frame. And disease is sort of like that end point, not the end point, but it is kind of that point where so much has happened over time that sort of built up, and then that is where we end up. So I think when we start focusing only on that one point, we're missing so much of the data of how we got there. And then that's, again, where we start looking a little bit deeper into things and starting to figure out that we need to put ourselves first. Or at least in tandem, we need to be taking care of ourselves at the same time that we're taking care of other people. And that's kind of where I'm at today. And I became a mom.
Wow. Okay. And just to add a little bit more pressure, you went and started a family, which we'll get into a little bit later on. But what I want to really go into before we go down that rabbit hole is how our emotional state becomes our physical state, because this is it. This is where it begins and ends. And we go through our young lives not realizing that the words we are speaking and the thoughts we're thinking is becoming our physical body. And eventually, over time, if we're not careful, it becomes our disease state. So many people ask, how does that happen? How does trauma, how do negative mindsets actually manifest in physical illness?
Essentially, adults are walking around 0 to 8 years old. That's it. They're like literally kids walking around in adult bodies. And so anything that we and th that's also to say that, of course, as we go through high school, middle school, junior high school, as we go through our adult lives, there's still things that can happen that can influence how we do things, right? Of course, looking at PTSD and all of those things, it can all change a person. So I know that. But in really where a lot of the things start is in that 0 to 8 years old. We don't have the same like logical filter for between kind of like the conscious and the subconscious mind like we do when we're adults. So kids are essentially just a sponge. They just are literally just taking their entire environment and just bringing it all in. And then what that means is that they're starting to create beliefs. They're starting to create how am I going to be in this world? How do I survive? How do I thrive? How do I respond to these things? And sometimes we don't have the best guidance through those times. And this is, of course, no guilt or shame to any parent out there. We all have our own lives as well. And there is also, the kids are engaging in their environment. They're engaging with their friends. They're engaging with their teachers. They're engaging with other family members. And at the same time, they're starting to figure out like, who am I going to be? How am I going to respond to these things? What am I going to believe? And so many times when we look at beliefs, when we look at emotions, which also coming from a generation where in multiple generations where emotions were sort of a thing that you don't tend to express, I think the and that being that is changing, of course. But the general way of looking at things was that emotions were things that you just didn't really show. We didn't necessarily express how we're feeling. And when we say like, oh, don't be angry because that makes people uncomfortable, or like, oh, don't cry because that makes people uncomfortable, those and just go along with the flow. Be like a good kid. Be the person that doesn't, make any ripples in
Rock
the,
the boat.
yes, exactly. That, when that happens, and when we're told to basically say like our emotions don't matter, or like our emotions are something to be ignored or something to be left for later, it gives a signal to the body that number one, it doesn't matter. So that's not great because that's one of the things we need to be paying attention to. Our body's very wise. It has a lot of wisdom stored in it. And it has a lot of, we lose a lot of trust when we start doing that in our own body, in our own mind. But then on top of that, those emotions then can get stored. Because if you think about it, like if I were to say, think about a time where you were super anxious about something, like you were super afraid. You can start, like, if you were to really pull it up in your mind, you can start to feel it in your body. You might feel tightness in your chest. You might start to feel that adrenaline going down into your feet. Or we could say, can you think about a time where you were super happy? And some people might think of their wedding day, or they might think of the day that they met their kid, or whatever that is. Those really, really happy times, and you feel a different sort of sensation in your body. Every single cell in your body is being bathed in those neurotransmitters and hormones that are associated with the different emotions. And so then if we're not actually processing and feeling those emotions, then, and we're starting to ignore it, they can start to get stored in the body. And then those stored emotions can start to be connected with different organ systems and diseases. And then it can start to manifest in that. And if for anybody that's like, okay, like show me, you can see this across most of, alternative medicine or looking into Eastern medicine. I mean, if you just look at acupuncture alone, the correlations between so many hormones and emotions and organ systems are, I mean, we've known it for hundreds of thousands of years. So, like I'll give an example, guilt being one that tends to sit in the lungs a lot, or the liver and the gallbladder tend to be like anger and resentment. So, and then fear, think about it that way. Like you sometimes get butterflies in your stomach, right?
Always.
Right. So there's many different organ systems that are associated with different emotions. And then that is sometimes when you start to see somebody who feels a lot of guilt, but then also gets a lot of like pneumonia or like constantly has this like chronic cough. These are ways we
It's
can
chest, yeah.
start putting those emotions together, and looking back to like, well, tell me about, that time when you were a kid that such and something happened. And then, you start putting those pieces and those puzzle pieces together. But that's how emotions can eventually lead to disease. And I didn't even talk about trauma, but anyway, those are some things. I'll stop there.
And I mean, I guess there are receptors on every single organ for all of our neurotransmitters and all of our hormones. So
Correct.
these, when we're making an abundance of cortisol or adrenaline, it's going to attach to organ systems, and every organ system talks to the next organ system. And that is actually the key. And I think if you think about it carefully, anyone can relate. Tension, headaches. When we are tense, we end up with pain in our necks and our backs. If you're nervous, you feel queasy. So if you just think about it on a very base level, in the moment, it's very tangible, but left untreated or unregarded over time, it does, not can, it really does become a chronic condition. And like you said earlier, as we don't put the dots together because it seems so disconnected and unrelated. And these things can go on for years and years, so we don't really see them in the moment. And then treating them, yes, allopathically, of course, you're going to take a painkiller or you can take something for nausea, but it's not getting to the underlying issue. And then we end up with these long-term problems which manifest into other problems. So yeah, I think, the key is really becoming conscious and aware of what we're thinking, what we're doing, how we are in the world to start. It's never too late. It's never too late to get well. And I think that's really, really important. But what you said earlier was, when you were talking about your story, was the first manifestation of real disease for you was the endometriosis and the migraines, which are very much hormone connected. But you very quickly mentioned there was GI distress. And let's dig in a little bit to the link between our hormones and our gut, because the more we learn, the more science evolves, the more we realize that these things are so interlinked, they're almost inseparable, where they were often, regarded as two separate different issues. So hormones and gut
Totally.
issues. And I think almost every second person listening to the show can probably relate.
Yeah, well, one thing that we know is that I think, and this is a really good reframe or way to think differently around hormones, but especially as like the concept of like root cause does of like finding the root cause of disease has become more and more of like a popular thing to look for, which I'm all about. And hormones are not a root cause. Like finding like imbalances in hormones is not really a root cause approach or a way to find the root, because hormones are just a reflection. They're like a mirror of or signal of like imbalance elsewhere in the body. So if people are, and I'm not saying to not go to an endocrinologist, like do the things you need to do, but like when we are only th looking at things in isolation, that's where we start to see problems, because most of the time there's other systems that are also doing things and interacting with those other systems. And that's where, we start to see like, well, I'm going to see this doctor, and then I'm going to see this doctor, and then I'm going to see this doctor. And then when you take a step back, you're like, but they're all connected. So when we're looking at the gut, one of the things that can be really impactful, but also have quite a bit of an influence on the endocrine system, is if there's any sort of GI microbiome imbalance. So the bacteria in the gut can influence how our like inflammation in the body, just in general.
For sure.
There could be overgrowths of bacteria. There can also be not enough bacteria if we've had way too many antibiotics. And those can influence the gut lining. They can influence our immune system. Remembering that, like, we have an entire immune system at the level of the gut. A whole entire immune system is at the level of the GI tract. So when we're thinking about hormones and thinking about inflammation and thinking about how the gut is interfacing with everything else that's going on in the body, we cannot forget that, like, if there is inflammation in the gut coming from potentially processed, lots of processed foods, potentially from foods that maybe we have some food sensitivities to, maybe we've had a lot of stress, and so now we have some intestinal permeability because it started to kind of break down that gut lining a little bit, and now we just see an increase in inflammation in the level of the GI tract. Now that's going to start influencing other areas in the body as well, including our hormones. We also know that the types of bacteria in our gut can influence our health too in other ways. Like, we've seen transplants of GI tract bacteria into different mice in different studies, and we've seen obesity, we've seen cardiovascular disease, we've seen diabetes, all from just taking bacteria from a mouse's GI tract that has that condition, that disease, and then put into, in theory, a healthy mouse, and then the same things happened, right? So there's a whole lot more going on at the level of the gut than we even know, really. I mean, research is still looking so much deeper into that, but you asked about my personal experience and what essentially what I have sort of tracked down. I didn't have a whole lot of antibiotics when I was a kid. My mom was pretty good about that, and we were also pretty good as far as like nutrition and diet, and those were all generally pretty good. But I have thought that at the time, and there's other things I think that really created, and I know that created a lot of inflammation from more of an emotional standpoint. And then I think we had a lot of dairy at the time too, and I do think that that was a food that I was becoming very, very sensitive to, and later tracked down that that was potentially a problem. And that I think had quite a significant impact on my GI tract, which then that constant inflammation is kind of like rubbing sandpaper on a wound. It just never heals if you don't remove it for some time to heal. And that, I think, just created a lot of this inflammatory storm that more or less kind of looked like autoimmune disease. at a certain point.
Exactly.
So that's, and I don't know if it necessarily was gut that caused the and I actually think the endometriosis was more from some emotional and mental stressors that were happening at the time, that then I think also the gut came in and all of the other things came in, and it was just the
Perfect
soup
storm.
of problems. But it affects our hormones 100%. And I had to heal my gut. That was part of my journey of healing endometriosis. I had to heal my gut in order to get to some of those deeper layers. It's
Absolutely.
crazy.
So, yeah, it is crazy, and to sort of unpick and figure out where to start is such a mammoth task, even if you have the knowledge base.
Oh,
And so many
yes.
people are suffering. Yeah. And in fact, I think sometimes it's worse because you can't be objective when you know too much. You don't know where to start. So you really need to be quite systematic about how you approach these things. And whether we're talking to like ourselves who work with these issues every day with other people, or somebody listening to this who is going, well, this is me. This is what I've been battling with for years. You really have to be, I think, work with someone who's super objective, who can understand how these parts are related. Yeah, and really sort of work back to the sort of the most simple, common, logical way of unpacking this process. And that takes mind work and mental work as well. It's not just, giving you a supplement or a nutritional protocol. This is a lot of mind work. In fact, I'd say 50% of it is getting unpacking all the emotional state, which is it's tough. It's tough, especially when you go along to a doctor or a dietitian or a nutritionist expecting a meal plan to solve your problems. And they say, well, we've got to work on your trauma. And people go, what?
I know people, I know. It's probably one of my hardest things that I do as far as like even my sales calls go, because it's just one of those things that you want to help people at their highest level. And they're saying, I just want a meal plan. Like, just tell me how to eat, and
It's not gonna work.
I'm like, don't you want to like actually heal the problem?
Exactly,
And
exactly.
it's there's a barrier there. There's some education that kind of needs to happen, and you have to sometimes
Sure.
meet people where they're at, but also hopefully podcasts like this and episodes, people are starting to listen and kind of open their eyes to the connection of the things, and hopefully we're
Yeah,
getting there.
it is. We will get there. So men and women suffer equally when it comes to trauma, when it comes to stress, how we manifest. But I don't think men manifest stress in the body in the same way that women do. Because, we're all human, but we've got very different coping mechanisms and different ways that we are in the world. And if I just look through your Instagram feed over the last couple of months, and it's shifted to really sort of start talking to women who have careers, who have families, and the battles we go through trying to be all things to all people, and the perfectionism and those mindsets that come along with that, and what it does to our bodies. So how do women's bodies really work differently to say men's bodies, and how do we need to start thinking about things differently?
A really good question, because I think on the like science level, especially when we're thinking about like stress and we're thinking about cortisol and just the amount of things that women do and are usually in charge of, right? And also thinking too about successful people who have careers, and whether and I'm really looking into this as sort of this new thing is determining and being okay with, potentially taking a pause between, having kids and then going back to careers, and really being open to whatever feels the best and is the best for the family. And I think women are also having to do a lot of the take a lot on a lot of the mental load as far as determining and deciding what am I going to do, and also sometimes a little bit of sacrifice, because for a lot of women who are like me, we like to work. We like to do that. We like to have, this is
Love
fulfilling
it.
for me. I love to do this. But for some families, it's not always going to be possible to do both, especially with childcare being at the levels that it is. So, when we're looking at the stress of what, women and men are each dealing with, the physiological way that the body responds to cortisol and distress is kind of generally ish the same. I mean, the same hormones start off the hypothalamus to the pituitary to the adrenals. The same hormones will kick off your adrenaline and cortisol that get released by your adrenals, which sit on top of the kidneys. Those same hormones will then go through your system and tell your body to do certain things like raise your blood pressure. It will also influence your cardiovascular system, and it also will impact the release of corticosteroids like norepinephrine, epinephrine, and can also have an effect on serotonin in the brain. So these systems are all the same for women and men. However, where I think things start to get a little bit differently is how each body breaks it down, and then also how our lifestyle actually can influence differently men and women and how we tend to do certain things. So one thing that is a little bit different is women will actually release oxytocin to help combat cortisol, which is fascinating.
Interesting.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so it can actually have a protective effect for women on that. And I have wondered, I have not actually looked this up, so I will preface this, but I have wondered if that is one of the reasons why when women are experiencing so many different hormone changes within that first year postpartum,
Yeah.
I've sort of wondered if that protective effect of oxytocin is part of how women can, generally speaking, be up multiple times a night and not sleeping very well, but then also have that protective effect of oxytocin, especially when they're breastfeeding. And if that doesn't potentially influence inflammation and how, generally it seems women do pretty well, more or less, through that, first couple of years. If everything, if they're resting and if they're getting enough of nutrition and things like that, I will preface it and categorize it with that. But, I do think there might be that might be something I need to look a little bit further into, because I've been wondering, like, how do women do this?
But it makes so much sense. And that
Right?
is, it's like, well, clearly this is the way we're wired. It makes sense that nature would make it this way.
Right. 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 So now, if we also then are adding on extra stress from work and we're putting all of the pieces together, as far as like we're also doing a whole lot at home and we're doing a whole lot, as parents and moms, it's a lot to put on just one person. And I do think, from what I've seen, the women who are doing it and also not necessarily getting burned out and are doing it well are the ones who are very good at delegating and the ones who have support. In whether that's family, friends, spouse, a nanny, daycare, like they have support, period. So if you don't have support, that is where I start,
Forget it.
saying like, well, I don't love to say let's manage our expectations, but also like let's manage what we're doing here and how much is actually physically and realistically possible for one person to be doing.
Exactly.
So I think that in many ways is how stress can tend to be a little bit different between men and women, because I also think that, well, I also know, I'll add in this little extra bit too, but like lifestyle wise, we know that like women, especially when they're drinking coffee, need to have protein or food in order to manage the effect that coffee can have on stress hormones and the body. And what do you usually see? Moms waking up, fueling off of coffee, not eating breakfast, barely eating
Not
lunch, and then
eating.
maybe eating dinner, and it's like that's going to add an additional layer of stress to your body and then an additional stressor on your hormones. So these are some of the differences that we can start to see. And we also know that imbalances with blood sugar, so not eating enough food, the one of the best solutions for brain fog and that like kind of mom brain is to eat food. Is actually like I tell you, like smaller meals throughout the day, like more 3 to 5 of them, like smaller meals spread out throughout the day will handle most causes of brain fog just like that.
Absolutely, and they'll help you lose postpartum weight
Yes,
as
Oh
well,
yes.
where everyone's on this.
Oh
Yeah,
yes.
that's the only way to do it.
Yeah,
Yeah.
yeah. Yeah, I mean, and even from that standpoint too, if we consider how stress and cortisol and blood sugar imbalances can relate to us wanting to potentially keep that on and keep those layers, it's a response that the body has because it feels like it's in famine. So, oftentimes, and breastfeeding is like, especially if women are breastfeeding, holy smokes, it is so much energy that goes. I have to essentially eat like I would when I was training for triathlon and Ironmans, as I would as I and I've lost most of the like I've lost most of my postpartum weight, and I'm 9 months now postpartum, and I'm eating like an athlete would. It's
Yeah,
crazy to
and
me, and I'm not training
it's
that much.
necessary.
So a lot of it is going into breastfeeding and creating milk. And I just, there's, it's just, you gotta eat food. You've got to support your body, from a nutritional standpoint. And those lifestyle things, really do have quite a big impact on our hormones and on the health of our body as well.
Absolutely, absolutely. And estrogen being a fat storage hormone, if the body senses that we're in famine, and estrogen being so high postpartum and other times during our lives, if we are not feeding and listening to those signals and trying to ignore it with coffee, especially, and pushing up our adrenals, it is a recipe for disaster. So yeah, if we can take anything away from this conversation, is women need to eat, and they need to eat small meals often. And I don't care who says you should be fasting or doing keto. It doesn't work for women the way it works for men
It doesn't.
because we're different in that respect.
Yes, right. Exactly. And the other thing too that I wanted to mention here as well is, especially since you mentioned estrogen, especially when we have higher levels of estrogen, and we can tie this back to the gut as well, but especially when we have higher estrogen levels, the organ in the body that deals with that is the liver. And so when we are producing higher levels of hormones, we also, everything has to go through the liver to be removed from the body, all of it. Everything. And so if we are, we have a lot of cortisol coming through. If we're not eating food, if we're not, and I'm being facetious there, but if we're not eating enough food, it puts a lot of stress, not just on our adrenals, but it puts stress on just about everything. Because when we think about the liver, you have to eat so many like colorful fruits and veggies in order to get enough vitamins and minerals and antioxidants. As well, like broccoli, cauliflower, these things are all really powerful. They have very
Detoxification,
detoxification foods, right? Exactly. So they impact the several stages of detoxification in the liver, which we, and it's amazing. I saw, like, when I was learning this in school, the number of antioxidants and vitamins and minerals that are needed in order for you to remove hormones and toxins from the body is. There is a ton.
Yeah, it's
It
significant.
is a lot. So then, that's one reason why we've got to be eating food, and we need to be eating a lot of colorful fruits and veggies. But then on top of that, we also need that fiber in the GI tract because we also use our gut, we use our kidneys, we use our skin as ways to remove toxins from our body as well. So if we don't have enough going through our gut to deliver that stuff into the GI tract to get out of the body, and if we are anxious and stressed and we're constipated, then a lot of those things that we're trying to get rid of can then come right back up into the body. There's certain things and bacterial changes that can influence the toxins that get dropped into the GI tract that then can be decoupled and absorbed right back into the GI tract or into the body. So essentially then what ends up happening is like those hormones, let's say it's estrogen, that used up estrogen can end up back into the bloodstream, and the brain doesn't see it as used up. It just says, oh, there's already some there. And then it will stop producing, and sending those signals to produce those hormones. And now we've just got this soup of problems, right? Of this circulating problem that we've got to essentially help open up all those pathways. We need to get you eating food. We need to get you eating lots of nutrient dense food. And then over time the body will start to balance itself out. So I wanted to tie that in because it's so important when you start thinking about how something so basic as eating food has such a big, and certain types of food has such a big impact on how your body functions and how well you feel.
Yeah. This episode is sponsored by Salal. Salal's Hormone Balance is a natural formulation designed to help relieve menopausal and premenstrual symptoms, including stabilizing menstrual cycle irregularities and relieving symptoms associated with menopause. Hormone Balance Natural HRT also helps relieve the pain associated with menstruation and helps to prevent osteoporosis in postmenopausal women. Salal's Hormone Balance is available everywhere you can purchase quality nutritional supplements.
Yeah, it's just not about calories. It's about everything else that is so critically
and
important.
Your thyroid is incredibly sensitive to low-calorie diets. Why do we think we see so many women with thyroid problems? It's because we've been told to diet literally our entire life.
Exactly. There's nothing like a crash diet to crash your thyroid.
Yes. So, you know, and then of course, if you have low thyroid function and it's slow, then you're going to have trouble losing weight. You're going to have trouble, you know, you're just, it's just a slew of things. So again, when I talked about the beginning about the hormones being not a root cause, they are a response to what's going on in our body. And I think it's really where disease and conditions start calling people forward to paying attention to what their body actually has to say.
Flash forward 9 months ago, should we say a year ago, you conceived and you had a wonderfully healthy baby girl.
Yeah.
And then reality hit. And I can completely relate to this. I also had a very healthy pregnancy. It was really easy. I thought I'd just go right back into work and I'd take her with me and everything would carry on as normal. And oh my goodness, life does not work like that. So let's chat, because I think a lot of the women listening to this can go, oh my goodness, how do I like listening to all of what we've been talking about. And I'm sure so many people can relate. Let's start with your story. What happened when you had your daughter?
Well, so I thought that I was going to pretty much work all the way up until when I gave birth. And then I thought after that, like, okay, I'll take a couple of months, but I also work from home. So, you know, like, let's just see what happens. And I did still actually take I still had a couple of clients that I saw, and I was pretty proud of that. But it's a whole big but with that. That is not what played out. In fact, what played out was several months prior to giving birth, my entire practice pretty much just like, I mean, there was, it was, there, I had very few people, which is so unusual for me. Like, very, very unusual. And so it forced me actually to start looking a little bit deeper at this. And I will say this because I do think that the brain and the body knows on such a deeper level what is going to be needed. I don't know if we could call it our future selves are looking out for us, or if it's God or the universe or whatever, or if it's just this innate knowing that we have. But I'm so glad that I had that time, because one of the things that I realized is that in my practice, a lot women would be like, oh, I just wish I could go back to that time before having kids. And it's this grieving sometimes that we don't do for our past life before kids that can stick with us for a while until we actually give ourselves the time to go through that grieving process, to release and say almost goodbye to this woman of who we were, to now transition into who we are now. And this all ties in, I promise. So then, you know, I go through labor. I have this incredibly traumatic labor experience, which is so unfortunate, because I had planned for a midwife, a birth at a birthing center with a midwife, and just this really natural way of allowing the body, the female body, to do what it's supposed to do, you know, and into open up and just really I really wanted to experience that unmedicated birth experience. Unfortunately, that is not what I got. I ended up with preeclampsia. You know, I planned for all of these things, and the lessons that I learned from that were incredibly important. One being that we do, you know, no matter how you go through birth, there is usually a moment where there is this like surrendering of just like, okay, this is it. So either
Exactly.
it's through the vaginal tract, or there was a moment where finally, you know, they said, hey, you're going to need to have a C-section. And I like looked at all of the charts and I was like listening to the things, you know, and I just had this moment of surrender that was like, okay, this is it. This is it. And so, you know, I think, anyway, so I had a very traumatic kind of thing there that happened. And I won't go into that here today, but then on the flip side, in postpartum, there are so many hormonal changes that happen so quickly on the other side. You literally become a different person. You literally become a different person. And there is not enough, and I created a course for this, a whole experience for this, but there is not enough support on the other side of labor. There's so much to like get you through and then how to help your baby sleep, how to feed them, how to do all that stuff. But what happens when your baby doesn't do the things that it's supposed to do, and none of the books and the things say like do these things, and your kid's like not doing those things, you know? And my kid was gaining half an ounce versus a whole ounce. It was making me extremely anxious. It was, you know, and I remember this moment. I was talking to my coach and she goes, you know, you can just listen and hear what they have to say, decide what you think, and then say, okay, we're gonna give it another couple weeks and see where we're at. She's like, you can take what they have to say and decide, you know, where you're at, which was exactly what I needed to hear at that time, because what it did was it allowed me to get back in touch with trusting myself, trusting what I thought, because I was like, I'm feeding this kid. I know she doesn't have a tongue tie. I know everything's fine. We are literally doing like as much as possible. And she's just on her own path right now, doing her thing. She didn't look unhealthy. She didn't look, you know, anyway. So my point here being that in that postpartum phase, we cannot. What we think is that we're going to be able to like control this kid and they're going to be able to like do what we want them to do. And it's going to go the certain way. And we're going to plan for all of this and we're going to textbook it, you know, and it's just like all of the things. And that is not what motherhood is about. Motherhood is about this transition into being a mom, which means identities have to change. Your values probably change. Who you are literally changes. Your brain matrescence completely
Completely.
changes. It's plastic. This is the coolest thing. It is the most plastic, meaning that it is the most changeable in that postpartum phase, that like first year-ish. Your brain will transform faster than any other time in your life in that
100%.
time frame, which is so freaking cool. It's so cool. So cool, which also means that your capacity changes. And we start, and but this is also then where it gets uncomfortable, because what we start realizing, and especially as people who like to work, you cannot put your old way of doing things into this new way. It forces you to learn a new way of doing things, and it can create a whole lot of resistance. And this is what happened for me, is like I just really had to manage and work and allow for this adaptability and flexibility of like, what's this going to look like? And how are we going to shift and change? And how am I going to see, like, I saw new layers of my worthiness being tied to my work. I saw new layers of that belief. I was like, oh, there you are again.
Oh yeah.
You know, and there's
Big
so
time.
many, so many things that we can start to come up front with. But if you don't have the tools, if you don't know what's happening, if you don't know what you know, how to sort through all of this, it's so It's so unsettling. It can feel very uncomfortable. If you also then don't have like social support and you can feel very isolated in all of it, that nobody really understands or knows what you're going through. Because also, by the way, your partner probably
Yeah.
doesn't know what you're going through. Like it's not realistic or fair, I would say, for them to expect them to actually know what's going on. Now, can they be empathetic and can they be supportive?
Absolutely.
100%. And I think this is just where, as women, community starts to become really important, because we can start to say like, hey, yeah, this is what happened for me. And instead of I'm going on a, I know I'm all over the
Keep
place, but
going.
like, instead of going on the like the you know this oh just wait till you get to this thing, and oh just wait till you till they you know the negatives of the things of like just wait, just wait, just wait, just wait, the instead we can say, hey, yes, this is what happened for me, and also these are the things that really helped me get through this. And I think that when we are able as women to start supporting other women, that is when motherhood can become such an amazing
For sure.
experience to go
And that's,
through versus it being
yeah.
so suffery and hard and struggly
But it's
and,
not supposed to be suffering. We're supposed to live in communities with
No.
wise women who've been through this, who can support us. This is how
Yes.
human beings have been for thousands of years. And now, in the last half a century, we find ourselves alone. And that is not how the brain works. And we wonder why we are going out of our minds with stress. It's because we're not meant to be doing this alone. We're meant to be sharing and
Right.
caring with each other. So we've got to go back to that if we hope to survive and thrive, going forward.
Yep, exactly. I learned actually through my midwives, and one of my midwives was from Israel. And she said that even over there, but even back way back when, one of the things that you'd have in a community is other breastfeeding moms would help with breastfeeding
Yeah,
infants, like for week old infants, because mom's milk might not have come
yeah,
in yet. So instead of it being this incredibly stressful time of like, oh, is my baby getting enough? And then do I need to feed them formula? And like, oh, yeah, is my milk going to come in? And it's just like this really, meanwhile, you might have gone through a really tough birth. So that stress can influence your milk
sure.
coming in. It takes that load off by just saying like, yes, your baby's going to be fed. You just focus on healing and it'll come. That's the community that used to be there, which we just don't really tend to have
Yeah.
anymore. We can build it in different ways, but anyway, that's just a side note of fun things that I learned as I was going through it. And I was like, holy smokes, like we were not meant to do this on
We are
our
not
own.
exactly that. And that can be said for so many other th themes in life, is we're not really meant to do anything alone. We're supposed to have support structures.
Right.
And, although the disconnect from our bodies and the way we handle stress is one of the biggest causes of disease, I really do believe that the disconnect from community is another massive reason that we are so burnt out and
Yeah.
ill.
I act yes, I heard, can I say
Yeah.
something really quick? I actually heard last night I was watching what was I watching? It was a speech by Gabor
Oh.
Mate, and one of the studies that he mentioned was a study where they looked at cancer. They looked at breast
Wow.
lumps in women, and one of the things that they found was that if there was just stress, there was no necessarily like correlation with the lump being cancer and malignant. If there was just emotional isolation, same thing, not really a correlation, but if there was stress plus emotional isolation, it increased the risk of that the lump being malignant and cancerous by
Wow.
nine times. And so just what you said there, I like a study has been done on exactly what you just said there, and it's both. It's both. We have to have community, and we have to have ways to manage our stress as well.
That's exactly right. So, wow, we could probably talk for another hour on this
I
subject, and
would
I
love
think we probably should. We should carry this further because there's so much more to unpack. But let's just swing back slightly before we wrap up.
How does a person listening to this start recognizing burnout? And how do, compared to, we know we're stressed, we know, when we're doing too much, we're working long hours, but how do we recognize what are the physical and mental symptoms of actual burnout?
So mental symptoms can be just feeling like really overwhelmed and overstimulated, like most days. Like most days, we're not really getting a break. We're living pretty much every day, waking up, maybe feeling anxious, maybe feeling, that just automatically we're just waking up and we're in that heightened state of survival and
Oh,
fight or flight.
okay.
And it's just not going away.
Wow.
Other signs of burnout too. Yes, we can do a whole other probably podcast about this because remember when we were talking about the gut has a way that it communicates with the brain that's called the vagus nerve. And depending on where our brain is at and how our body is working with this stress, we can get to a point where we call it dorsal vagal, which is where the body and the brain essentially goes into like depression mode that's like, I'm going to hide from a rock and I can't do anything else. So burnout sometimes can be those signs of like things are like, if I could just not leave my bed for a week, like that would be ideal, right? So those are sort of some of the signs to start just being aware of or starting to really feel like are like we're a failure, like we're never getting it right, and that just is leading to this like soup of just never feeling like we're 100% ourselves, exhaustion. And I would even say, and I experienced this last month, so I know how powerful this can be, but also how unsettling it can be. But wanting to. And if you don't have the tools to be able to help yourself through it, that is where this can really get really bad. I realized I was like, I just want to keep handing my kid off. Like, I don't want to be present with her. Like, I felt this need to just be like, on my own somehow. And my heart goes out to anyone who's experiencing that.
Horrible.
Do think it can start to lead into postpartum depression and anxiety and all of those things. But it is a very, very key sign to start taking a step back and like if you need to see a therapist, if you need to start, talking to someone, it is the time to start doing that because it doesn't have to be that way. But also obviously there's some very big things that are starting to come up and happen in the body. So other things too, other signs of burnout, especially in the physical body, can be like gut stuff that's like really just bloating or tightness or just constipation, things that are just not really moving very well. Other signs can be brain fog, can be just never really feeling like you're getting enough sleep, never waking up, well. Also being super tired in the middle of the day or waking up between like 1 to 3 a.m. is a sign of cortisol imbalances that could be signs of burnout. Gosh, there's probably so many more. I know
So
for
many.
me, mine kind of led to daily stress hives. And so it took me about I think 8 or 9 months to heal that one. Once that started, it was not fun. And again, it's all of the things. So, you got it's deeper layers of healing and looking at stuff like that. But anyway, histamine things, right?
Oh,
Eczema,
yeah.
psoriasis, autoimmune disease also can be one that tends to pop up over time if burnout has just been going on for a long time. And this, I just want to say this before I stop, but burnout will follow you wherever you
It
go
will.
until you deal with it. Until you deal with it. I've talked now to multiple moms who said, well, I stopped working thinking that the burnout was because I was working and with my kids. And then now I'm just with my kids and I'm still burned out. And I'm like, yes, because got to get to the root of the thing. These are just patterns and things that we've learned over time that can follow us. And we've just got to get down to the root of where they come from. And that's a whole other podcast to probably get there
That
on those things.
is,
But there's a lot that we need to do.
that truly is a whole other show. So just to end on a high note,
many people listening will go, oh my goodness, I can relate to this. I've got twitchy nerves in my eyes. I wake up at 2 a.m. I've got racing thoughts. I've got bad dreams. I've got all these symptoms. I've got pain. Where did we start? Where do we start when we realize, okay, this is it. I've got to do
Yeah.
something.
Well,
Where do we go?
being that this is the Reinvent Health podcast, I would say that like nutrition, I will say this till the cows come home. Like I probably die on this hill, but like nutrition is one of the key places that we have to start because it's all information for our body and our cells. You've got to eat foods that support your body. So that's key number one. And then if that's pretty dialed in, I'd say then exercise is going to be another really key thing because we know that exercise can improve mood. We know that exercise can help, improve. Well, it keeps us moving too, and it can help us with some of that processing. But then after that, if you've got some of those things dialed in, maybe we've also started looking at some functional testing, or we're starting to look a little bit deeper at, gut stuff and things. I would say the next step to start looking for is a functional practitioner or somebody who can, an integrative practitioner that can start looking at the physical body pieces. And at the same time, let's start paying attention to and becoming aware of, what are our thoughts going on here? What are some of the emotions? And I'll leave you with three questions. These are three questions that will literally change your life if you actually do them and use them. And also if you're kind of a dissociated person that has left a lot of your stuff to the last on the plate. Asking in one in any moment, how am I feeling right now? What do I want? And what do I need? The how am I feeling right now is sometimes really hard to know how you actually are feeling. Whatever the answer is fine. That's like just know how you're feeling. And then with what you want and what you need, sometimes you're not always going to be able to do something about those two things. Like sometimes if you're tired and you still got the rest of the workday to go. Like you got the rest of the workday to go. You're probably not going to be able to cancel that. However, what you can say is, well, what I would want right now is a nap, or what I would want is a break, and what I need is whatever it's going to be. Okay, well, I can't do something about that right now, but one thing that I can do is I can make sure I have some time at the end of my workday to do something that I want to do, or to meditate, or to do some deep breathing exercises, or to do something that will help me to sort of just feel like I've gotten some time for myself. Those, in as long as you take action on those things, those three questions will completely change. It will change how you think, it will change how you feel, it will change how you respond to your body, it will change how your body feels, because you're finally starting to say, my body matters, and what I have to say, what I feel, all of these things, what I want, what do I need, they all matter, and I'm not going to keep rolling over them as if they don't, and they will literally change your life.
And just asking those questions already changes your brain
It does.
chemistry, which will change your hormonal state. So
It does,
the
exactly.
downstream already starts to fix. And what we really need to realize is the body is geared for healing. So the minute we change state and reframe, everything
Yes.
starts to work for us rather than against us. So that is those are really powerful questions. Kirsten, thank you so much for sharing your wisdom. I know as a healer, which is what you are, we have to go through the trenches to really come to grips with
Yes.
what we need to do to help people. Watching your story, watching your journey over the last couple of years is really inspiring because I can see how you're battling with these very real issues and how you're bringing them to the light and using them to help so many people. So I really need to commend you for doing your work because it is so, so important and it helps so many people. It helps people you'll never get to meet, which is the gift that we've been given, especially when we have a platform like a podcast to get it out there. So where can our audience reach you if they want to touch base and connect with you?
Yes, Instagram is a great place, but also Facebook at Dr. Kirsten. So DrKirstin. It's a wonderful place to find me. And then you can also find me at drkirsten.com. That's another place as well. And you'll find ways to get in contact with me. But send me a message. I'm like on Instagram. I'd love to hear from anyone that this resonated with. And yeah, it's a great place to find me.
Great. Thank you so much again. And we will be talking again soon. And I hope you have an absolutely wonderful week going forward.
Thank you, and you as well. Thank you so much.
Thank you.